the approach is that you think about what we know from RCTs, what we know from models, mm-hmm. what we know from other work, and synthesizing these together. It's not really about having perfect experiments or perfect models, but about providing some information that can help these policymakers improve their ability to make decisions.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. Macroeconomic policies to grow the economy have been essential for poverty reduction. But on Vox Dev Talks, we mostly talk about smaller scale RCTs and experiments. Now, can macro theory and micro empirical research complement one another better? And what does this imply for each discipline and for its researchers? Francisco Buera of Washington University and Joseph Kobosky of Notre Dame have written a paper that explores how economists can work towards this synthesis, and they join me now. Paco, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Hi, Tim. It's a pleasure to be here.
And Joe, welcome as well.
Thank you. We should add that Rob Townsend is a co-author on the paper.
Yes, we absolutely should. Macro and trade models produce useful insights for policy at scale, and RCTs tell us a lot about what works at a smaller scale. Do we really need to synthesize them?
Yeah, I think there's really two main reasons that we need to synthesize them. You know, first, RCTs give wonderful evidence. They're very good at answering specific policy questions. But as you say, they're very often small scale. They're very often short run and often on particular populations. But even for these specific policies that they answer, we really want to know how these will perform at scale and under what somewhat different circumstances than they were tested. And that often requires macro models. And then a second is that a lot of the more interesting policy questions, you know, for example, infrastructure investments, are not something that we can really evaluate using an RCT. Mm-hmm. And yet experimental and quasi-experimental evidence can still inform the macro models and thinking about elements of those policies.
So let's back up a little bit and think about why each end of this story has been effective in the last half a century. Now, RCTs, they're using economic theory. They're testing usually a single question of interest. Why have they been so revolutionary in their impact on development?
I would say it's because under the ideal conditions and when asking the appropriate questions, they guarantee to provide the correct answer.
Yeah.
So it's important to stress the right questions and implement it correctly. And those being the ideal conditions, their answers guarantee to be credible. And that's why they are an integral part of what the so-called credibility revolution.
RCTs help distinguish true causation from the problems of things like just correlation or selection bias. So we see that people with education earn more, for example. But how much of that is because of the education, and how much of that is because they were smarter to start out with, they were harder working, maybe they were wealthier to begin with? RCTs are going to help disentangle these things and really get at the causal impacts.
But if I'm a policymaker, what can't they tell us?
They cannot tell us what would be the effect of scaling up the policies. They are typically more limited about telling us about what will be the long-run effects of policies or how they will impact prices or what will be the larger effects. For example, if you give people a training program to a small amount of individuals, they might increase their earnings. But if you give the same training programs to all the population, it might be reasonable to expect that there will be a competition for work and that will the returns to people will decline. They give us important dots, but they require theory, in particular micro-theoretical frameworks, to connect all these dots. They cannot be used to evaluate alternative policies or accumulate alternative pieces of information to design the best policies. That's, to us, the main limitation.
But there has been some work, hasn't there, to investigate how they can more effectively be scaled up and to be policy relevant like this. What progress has been made in that direction?
Yeah, there's definitely been progress, Tim. I mean, there's been advances on at least two important fronts that are prominent. First, there's examples of large-scale policy experiments that reach millions of people, where people have evaluated these. And you can learn about potential bottlenecks in a larger-scale policy through these experiments. Second, people now run experiments where they vary the intensity of treatment at a local level, and they identify local spillovers and price effects. But there are limitations too to these types of things. So large experiments, long-run experiments are costly, both in terms of the expense of running the experiment, but also because you're preventing the control from getting what might be a very beneficial treatment for longer time. So they might even be politically costly at times. On the dimension of the spillovers, you can get local price effects, but you can never get like a true aggregate impact at the nationwide level because there's no control to compare to at that point. You know, as Paco said, it is ultimately about connecting the dots. Using theory, you can do this, for example, looking at this aggregate impact. There's some exciting spatial work by Lauren Berquist and my colleague, Matthias Holzlein, and other co-authors that are using spatial models to show the aggregate impacts of input subsidies at scale. They model how these price impacts that happen locally are going to filter through spatially interconnected markets. And what they find is that aggregate impacts of these input subsidies, agricultural input subsidies, are smaller than the micro impacts in that case.
Now, looking at this from the macro end, we now have many decades of experience in macro modeling. Until recently, how effective were those macro models if we're thinking about specifically development policy?
Tim, it's fair to say that their influence was limited, and their limitations can partially explain the growing demand for RCTs among practitioners. In particular, the regeneration of macro models focusing on representative age and representative agents, single sectors, ignoring the role of distributions and frictions, led to some dead end for sure. Some of it was detected by computational limitations, but they were also driven by a misplaced hope that missing richness or some of this richness would not matter. Therefore, they make them particularly inappropriate for thinking about developing countries where frictions and spatial frictions abound and distribution considerations are often first order. At the same time, there have been some lessons from that research. They highlighted some key concepts like the importance of diminishing returns in the aggregate, which leads to imply that periods of high growth are bound to be limited. China is a nice example these days that illustrate that. They help us quantify the importance of human capital and technological progress and the limits of some simple aggregate development policies.
Have we been able to make improvements to these models that have overcome these problems?
There's been a lot of improvements. In macro, you know, there's been an explosion of models incorporating the rich heterogeneity that characterizes developing and developed economies, both quantitative spatial models, like I described, are transforming a lot of subfields, urban economics, trade, everywhere. There's a lot of new tricks to solve and compute these models. And then there's approaches like the sufficient statistics approaches or other simplifications where you don't need to solve the full model in all cases. And it allows you to basically work with more complicated models. Again, models with frictions, as Paco said, be they spatial frictions, financial frictions, labor market frictions, contracting frictions, are particularly relevant for low-income countries. But at the same time, the exploration of new micro data sets has helped motivate key types of heterogeneity. What kind of frictions do you want to build into your models? And then also help discipline the parameters in those models that govern how strong the forces are. And ultimately, quantifying the relevance of these different frictions in accounting for the differences across countries or how much development they can explain and designing policies to promote development and then directing us on what's important. What should we be focusing on in development?
So we've got progress from, you could call it, the bottom up and from the top down, but you're still saying that there is a disconnect here.
Much less so these days, especially among the young generation. We will say that there is not much room to be disconnected to micro research. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of excitement to build bridges and have conversations. There are always going to be people that are going to be specializing on the macro end of the spectrum in theory and empirics. And there's some question for which heterogeneity and the associated micro facts might play a secondary role. And in that case, there doesn't need to be that much connection. Many, as we said before, the important current macro development questions intersect with distributional concerns, so they need this conversation. The point is that you cannot learn a lot more by applying theory to an experiment and vice versa. A nice example of this is the work by Freit and Lagacos that showed that the impact of reliable electricity are much larger than what you will see from power losses at the small scale. And the reason for that is the fact that in the current situation of developing countries, people have invested a lot on ways to ameliorate this cost, but you get these large gains when you can undo all these inefficient investments. So you need to have the connection, and the current generation of researchers are very aware of that, of the value of those connections.
Okay, so I'd like to talk a little bit about how we build these bridges in practice. Imagine a situation and we want to do some micro empirical work on an intervention and we want to bridge it to insights from these macro models. What additional goals would you say that this research project should have, could have?
Let me give you an example that's close to home from my own research with Molly Lipscomb, Virgilio Midrigan, and Carolyn Pelnick. It's recent work. Both macro models and micro models of individuals, which end up becoming the building blocks of the macro models, they tell us that financial frictions and expansion of financial services is more impactful for development when investments are indivisible. Mm-hmm. And by indivisible, I mean, for example, you need $1,000 to buy a tractor that's productive. If I only have $100, I can buy the steering wheel, but that doesn't help me very much. In these types of models and situations, people can get stuck in poverty traps. The person that can afford the tractor ends up earning more income. The person that can't afford the tractor is stuck in poverty. Mm-hmm. What's less appreciated is that they can also be risk-loving. So people can have a genuine hope of gambling their way out of this poverty trap. If I take enough risks, I might be able to get past this threshold. What we did was we used these theories as models to design an experiment in Uganda where people choose between safe and risky lotteries. And indeed, we found evidence for these theories that people, even though being quite poor and naturally risk-averse, would take these risky lotteries, and the people that won would make large investments. And these investments ended up being in land, in this case, not in tractors. And so we used the experimental evidence together with the model to show that the credit interventions are going to be more powerful if the indivisible investments are something like tractors and that can be produced at a constant cost. But savings interventions are much more powerful when these indivisible investments are land purchases because land is in more fixed supply. So this is an example that we're starting with this macro theory of what's important leads to a micro experiment with micro policy implications.
When you're thinking like this in your research, when do you consider this? Is it right at the beginning or is it when you got some results and you want to explain them?
Sometimes you can do this post-analysis, but sometimes it has to be done at the beginning of your research. Mm-hmm. To put a twist on the title, moving from macro to micro development can help. For example, thinking about linking experimental data to macro representative data and getting appropriate sample to do so. That's a consideration that to be done before you run your experiment.
But I know from the experience of talking to researchers, RCTs can be a lot of work, even ones that have a very tight focus. If you are going to try to answer some bigger questions like this, is it always going to be practical to do this research?
I should probably take this one since I've run RCTs.
Yes.
And I appreciate that they are a lot of work. I think the answer is, you know, sometimes yes and sometimes no. RCTs, I mentioned that some have been done, but they can, in other cases, be impractical for the reasons I mentioned. They're costly. You have to keep a control. But the thing is that we need to answer these bigger questions. There's policymakers all the time that are making decisions on large-scale policies. And the question is whether we can make those people and those decisions the most informed decisions possible. The approach is that you think about what we know from RCTs, what we know from models, what we know from other work, and synthesizing these together. It's not really about having perfect experiments or perfect models, but about providing some information that can help these policymakers improve their ability to make decisions. And this is really the goal of the synthesis that we're promoting.
You had a success with the RCT that you ran, Joe, in this context. Are there other examples of work in this area?
I guess let me chime in from more the macro side. I would say that a lot of the recent macro development work is attempting to do this. Early work by Joe and Rob Townsend in Econometrica combining natural experiments in Thailand with a structural model to evaluate the impact of the Thai million baht billiard funds is a nice example. Our work with Joe and Yongxin Ristad, where we use microdata, experimental evidence, and a macro development model to analyze the macro implications of microfinance, is another. One lesson from that research is that paradoxically, an expansion of microfinance when scale up is eventually associated with a decline in the availability of productive capital in the economy. Mm. Our research also showed there are positive distributional gains for the poorest, though. And now, since then, there have been empirical work consistent with some of these predictions, for example, work by Bress and Keenan in the QJE.
If I'm a researcher and my focus is on small-scale experiments and RCTs, would you have any advice for me on how I could make this research more policy relevant?
I will tell them to try to design your experiment also to learn about key elasticity to the matter for the scaling up of this project. The work by Wyatt Brooks, Kevin Donovan, Terence Johnson on experiments to learn about the channel through which ideas do or do not flow across firms is a great example of this interaction.
Yeah, I would team up with some macro development researchers. You know, often it's adding like a simple twist or measurement that allows it to be useful for these larger scale questions as well. So again, if you team up early, but sometimes you can do it after the fact. And then I guess once you're done, I would recommend you do a podcast on Vox Dev to make it policy impactful.
Okay, so if I'm a different researcher, I'm interested in macro development, I'm across the corridor. What should I be doing to make sure that my work is grounded in empirical research?
I would recommend to understand very well the model elements that are driving your conclusions and to explore as much data as possible to test the validity of these key model elements. Oftentimes, that validity could come from looking at experiments that have been run that speak to your model elements and try to run experiments in your model to see if the model is able to reproduce these RCTs evidence.
After giving the selfless plug for VoxDev, let me give a couple of more self-interested plugs. I would say the biggest advice I would say is get involved in STEG.
Oh, yeah.
I would look at the virtual courses we have, especially if you're a student. Get out of your graduate student office. Go visit a low-income country to make sure your ideas are grounded in reality. There's only so much that you can learn from sitting behind a computer, even poring at the data. Get tooled up on both models and data. And then as another quick sales pitch, you know, we just founded the Big Lab at Notre Dame, and that's another thing that we get involved in. We'll be sponsoring conferences, we'll be sponsoring a data hub, and other things that will, I think, will assist young researchers. So we're trying to lower the barriers to getting involved.
For people who haven't found STEG yet, what is it, Joe?
Oh, STEG is Structural Transformation and Economic Growth. Mm-hmm. It is an FCDO-funded, CEPR-administered research program on, I would say, macro development, but incorporating micro researchers and researchers of all types to think about the large-scale development questions in low-income countries and policy.
Okay, and so finally, imagine that I'm a policymaker and I'm frustrated because I've got this gap in the research. I'm getting macro stuff and micro stuff. Is there anything that I can do personally to help close that gap?
I think researchers, I just speak personally, but I think one of the things we've realized at STEG, researchers are always trying to make their research relevant. Mm-hmm. And so looking for opportunities to collaborate with policymakers and practitioners in the global south. And I think policymakers and practitioners have limited resources. They have a lot to gain by collaborating with researchers. Practitioners in low-income countries often have access to great data sources. They have local knowledge. They have the ability to implement experiments, etc. So I think there's really big gains to trade. And STEG is trying to think of ways to better facilitate these.
Well, let's hope you realize them. Thank you very much for talking about this today. Thank you, Paco.
Thank you very much, Tim. It was great.
And thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Tim.
The paper is called From Micro to Macro Development, and the authors are Francisco Buera, Joseph Kabowski, and Robert Townsend. You can find it in the Journal of Economic Literature, Volume 61, Number 2. That's published in 2023. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. And our past episodes, as always, are at voxdev.org, where you will also find articles about the papers we feature.